A quick note about the segment you're about to hear. Earlier today, when this show aired live in the noon hour, we report in this conversation that black people represent 17% of the American population. That isn't correct. According to the Census Bureau, black people make up about 13.4% of the American population. We regret the error. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The number of people incarcerated in the United States is higher than any other nation in the world. Although that figure has declined in recent years, according to the Federal Bureau of Justice Statistics, there were slightly under 1.5 million people in prison at the end of 2017. If you gathered those people in one place, it would be one of the largest cities in the nation. The National Underground Railroad Freedom Center, with the Ohio Justice and Policy Center and the Urban League of Greater Southwestern Ohio, is examining the role of structural racism in the nation's disproportionate incarceration rates, where blacks represent just 17% of the national population, but represent 38% of the prison population. The Freedom Center is holding a virtual talk tomorrow, April 13, at 2 p.m., to discuss the links between race, criminalization, and incarceration in America. Joining Cincinnati Edition to discuss the talk are Ohio Justice and Policy Center senior paralegal Sheila Donaldson. Sheila, welcome to Cincinnati Edition.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We also have with us Ohio Justice and Policy Center Deputy Director Sasha Naiman. Sasha, thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
And Urban League of Greater Southwestern Ohio Center for Social Justice Director Raquel Howard Smith. Raquel, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Sheila, let's start with you. This is a startling statistic to see that black people represent 17% of the American population, 38% of the prison population. What's going on here?
Well, what's going on, it is structural racism. It begins with poverty. It begins with addiction, lack of education, biases, just flat out racism.
I understand that you spent time incarcerated.
Correct.
Well, can you talk a little bit about what that experience was like and how that has shaped your view now that you work in justice and policy?
How it was like was several rude awakenings in my life. The reason I say that because I suffer from a disease of addiction. So when I was in, you know, getting sentenced and getting in trouble, I had a problem. And so they fixed the problem by transporting me to prison. And so I think it was mainly because of money. In my opinion, that's how it shaped me, because of the amount of monies they get for each person going into prison. And a lot of times, I was sentenced my first time. A lot of times people get probation and other, avenues, but I got sentenced the first time. So it did shape me like this was not right.
And so ultimately, when you were released for the last time, almost 30 years ago, I understand, you decided to go to UC and you studied to become a paralegal. And talk about the work that you're doing now as it relates to keeping people from going behind bars.
Well, the work that I'm doing now, I'm in a Second Chance project, and I have been in a host of projects at OJPC, but it does my heart well to identify with our clients and help them along, you know, to change their life around and maybe make some better decisions to stay out here and to, you know, stay above water, so to speak, when it comes, because there's so many different angles that you have to deal with. I mean, people don't want us to live in their apartments. They don't want to give you a job if you have theft on your record, if you have aggravated trafficking and sales. And so I just got to give a shout out to our colleague, Tyra Patterson, who started the arts project, Time Saved versus Time Served. If we start doing a lot of that and, you know, really find out and talk to the people when they first come into the system, then we will realize that maybe, just maybe, they might have a mental illness. They might have the disease of addiction. They might have other things going on with them instead of carting them and moving them on a train to prison. So I hope that helps. And when people think, I'm going to say this, and when people call me and they think that I haven't been in trouble or anything like that, and they're crying and they're frustrated. And so I always give them that hope. And that's when I share my story with them. And then they feel so much better because they're like, oh, okay. So it's rewarding.
That's Sheila Donaldson, a senior paralegal at the Ohio Justice and Policy Center. We're also joined by that organization's deputy director, Sasha Naaman. Sasha, when I note that Black people represent 17% of the American population, but 38% of its prison population, that's a figure that goes well beyond just the makeup of prisons, because people like Sheila do ultimately come out of prison, but like she noted, they face significant barriers. And so you see within that population lingering challenges because of run-ins with the law. Can you explain some of those lingering impacts societally?
Absolutely. So when a person has a criminal record and they're back out in the community, they're actually among quite a large group. 90% of the people who are incarcerated are going to come back out. They're going to be your neighbor. They're going to need to reintegrate in a productive way into society. But then they face barriers because of their criminal record. About 95% of employers run background checks. Same thing with landlords and schools. In Ohio law alone, there's over 1,000 barriers on what a person with a criminal record can do. Where they can work, where they can volunteer, different types of civic participation. It's all very limited. And in addition to those legal barriers, there's just the stigma. So a person with a record is going to be half as likely to get a call back when they apply for a job. And part of the work that we do at OJPC is to try to help people remove some of these barriers their criminal records create through record sealing, expungement, a tool called Certificates of Qualification for Employment, reducing some of those barriers and sometimes completely eliminating them. There's also the issue of court debt. People leave jails and prisons, and they have very large amounts of court debt, fines and fees and court costs that can really create barriers. It keeps cases open, keeps them underwater, to use the opposite of Sheila's term. So we help people figure out ways to convert that into community service or to waive those fines and fees completely. And as you mentioned earlier, you know, the impacts of the legal barriers and the non-legal barriers of having contact with the criminal legal system, they're felt disproportionately by Black and Brown communities. These are people who are going to be more likely to have been arrested. And if arrested, they're more likely to be convicted. And if convicted, they're more likely to be incarcerated. And if incarcerated, they're more likely to be incarcerated for longer. So you have this long track of injustice and racism and racial disparity in the criminal legal system that now creates a disproportionate number of Black and Brown people with records who then face these additional barriers in reentry to education, housing, employment, family reunification, self-sufficiency.
That's Sasha Naaman, Deputy Director of the Ohio Justice and Policy Center. We're also joined by Raquel Howard-Smith, the Director of the Center for Social Justice at the Urban League of Greater Southwestern Ohio. Raquel, as we just had Sasha explain, the disproportionate representation of Black and Brown people within the American prison population, it does have direct impacts on their ultimate roles in society. Are there answers to this problem?
Well, you know, first of all, mass incarceration, we know, is a racial justice issue. And I think that there are answers. The Center for Social Justice exists to prevent police violence in our region. But our theory of change is that if we reduce the unnecessary contact with police in the first place, there's no opportunity for interaction to escalate to a use of force or for people to be funneled through the criminal legal system. Over the last decade, there's been a lot of focus on implicit bias or anti-bias training for police officers. But I think my colleagues would agree today that although training is important, we cannot train our way out of racism. This is a systemic issue, and we hope at tomorrow's event we will explore reimagining our criminal legal system as a whole. We have to take a systemic approach, and we'll try to give the listeners tomorrow some very concrete suggestions as to how we can not just reform our system, but transform our criminal legal system and leave people out, prevent their contact with the system in the first place. Just for example, decriminalizing acts that can be addressed by social service intervention, taking a systemic approach from that angle. We often, like I said, talk about reform, but transformation is much more difficult. What is important right now is that we have a prime opportunity. Folks protested over the summer against police violence, and now every single sector is talking about how their sector is impacted by systemic racism. We've been having this conversation in the criminal legal system for decades, but now we're talking about it as a whole. So a cross-sector approach right now is not just optimal, it's possible, which is why we're having these honest conversations about how we can reimagine the criminal legal system that has only served or benefited a few and been a detriment to very many in this country.
Raquel, you mentioned reimagining, and I know that there's a conversation, a longer conversation to be had at Tuesday's event at 2:00, and we've got details on the event at WVXU.org inside the Cincinnati Edition tab. But could you give us a bit of an idea of how you'll go deeper into what that might look like?
The easiest example to give is decriminalizing drug use. We have a great example, the biggest social service experiment I feel like we have in recent time, with the legalization of marijuana. It started in one state and trickled to very many. And now you have a multi-billion dollar industry being created when just, you know, a decade ago, it was illegal. And there are very many folks that are still in prison, mostly Black and Brown, who were criminalized for their participation in the marijuana trade. Now we have an opportunity as a society, or, you know, to reimagine what that looks like for our entire country, to stop locking people up for marijuana use and for trafficking, and to actually reinvest in our communities that have been directly impacted by the criminalization of marijuana. So that is the best example that I can give. And I think that we can definitely take that model and stretch it further to affect change, not just in local communities, but in our entire country.
That is Raquel Howard-Smith, the director of the Urban League of Greater Southwestern Ohio Center for Social Justice. Also with us is Sasha Naiman, who is the Ohio Justice and Policy Center deputy director. Sasha, we've heard this argument before as it relates to drug use, that the mass incarceration rate would drop dramatically probably if such cases were not pursued. And they also disproportionately target people of color when studies have shown that that type of drug use is equally or more represented by white people. So is this something that should be explored?
Absolutely. So we know that in the case of drug use and drug sales, Black and white people do it at approximately the same rates, but incarceration rates are very different. Black people are going to be disproportionately incarcerated. But I also want to take it a step further, because I think sometimes the conversation begins and then ends with kind of low-level nonviolent drug offenders. But our mass incarceration problem is bigger than that. Our mass incarceration problem includes over-sentencing people for violent crimes. So I'm talking about people who are safe now, who are rehabilitated. They might have served, you know, 15 years, long sentences, and they still don't have fair opportunities for release. I'm talking about people who are incarcerated when they're not convicted of anything. So over half of our jails are filled with people who are there prior to any conviction. They're awaiting trial or through their trial process. They may ultimately be found innocent or found not guilty. They're there because often they're just unable to pay their bail. So I want to stress that when we're looking at mass incarceration and kind of the unique and unfair way that the U.S. locks up an incredibly large number of people, we have to remember there are absolutely moments of unfairness with people who are using and conveying drugs. And also, we have many other people who are unfairly incarcerated, including for people who admit to committing violent crimes. And then we still have to think about what is fairness? How much of a sentence is enough, rather than having this addiction to caging people and this comfort with throwing them away for incredibly long periods of time.
Let's bring back Sheila Donaldson. She is a senior paralegal at the Ohio Justice and Policy Center, also someone who had spent time in prison on drug-related charges. You had received several years on your sentence, Sheila, when you were convicted of aggravated drugs. Do you think that something outside of prison as a way of rehabilitation would have been more beneficial to you?
Yes, I do. I think probably some treatment, you know, some community service, you know, like getting myself on track and, you know, having people help me that wanted to help me.
And so in our last 30 seconds together, if you could change right now one policy related to drug-related offenses and sentencing, what would it be?
If I could change one thing, I think the most thing is that you would be evaluated, and if it's your first time, that you would possibly get some treatment and not be sentenced to prison. That's what I would definitely change that.
Mass Incarceration and Racial Justice. It's a virtual discussion Tuesday, April 13 at 2 o'clock. It's hosted by the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center, the Ohio Justice and Policy Center, and the Center for Social Justice at the Urban League of Greater Southwestern Ohio. You can find a link for more information on tomorrow's chat at WVXU.org inside the Cincinnati Edition tab. My thanks to Sheila Donaldson and Sasha Naiman from the Ohio Justice and Policy Center, and Raquel Howard-Smith, the director of the Social Justice, the Center for Social Justice at the Urban League of Greater Southwestern Ohio. Sasha, Sheila, Raquel, thanks to all three of you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow.